ఓం శ్రీ గురుభ్యో నమః. హరి ఓం. పూర్ణమద పూర్ణమిదం పూర్ణాత్ పూర్ణముదచ్యతే పూర్ణస్య పూర్ణమాదాయ పూర్ణమేవావశిష్యతే. ఓం శాంతిశాంతిశాంతి. శ్రీ గురుభ్యో నమః. హరి ఓం. బిఫోర్ స్టార్టింగ్ ది నెక్స్ట్ సిరీస్ ఆఫ్ వెబినార్స్ ఆన్ కఠోపనిషత్, ఐ వుడ్ లైక్ టు ఆఫర్ మై సాష్టాంగ నమస్కారంస్ at the lotus feet of my guru jagadguru shri shri bharati teertha mahaswamigal of shri sharada peetham shringeri and to the paramacharya of kanchi kamakoti peetham swami chinmayananda saraswati, swami dayananda saraswati and swami paramarthananda, whose lectures and writings I have benefited immensely, and I am mostly structuring my own webinars based on their teachings only. So there is nothing that is original from me. I am trying to only convey whatever I have understood within my limited understanding based on the teaching of these scholars. And most of these teachings are based on Adi Shankara's commentary. And I have depended upon Shankara's commentary whenever needed and referred to them so that I can have a clearer understanding. So before we go into the Kathopanishad, the text itself, I just would like to show you a book. This is like a notes, cliff notes kind of a book. This is Kathopanishad.
Access online as a webinar instead of this?
This is like a textbook kind of book, which can be used as a...
How do you put this in?
Speaker phone is on, I'll mute them. So this can be used as a quick reference. This is as Chinmaya Mission publication. The lectures commentary by Swami Chinmayananda, and also there are commentaries available in similar format with Swami Dayananda Saraswati also, and Ramakrishna Mission, and so many other books. People can refer to any book of their choice. I just only wanted to show you this book so that it could be available to you for a quick reference. It could be commonly available in many Chinmaya centers and other places. Now, when we talk about Upanishads, they generally deal with Vedanta. And they come under the Jnana Kanda portion of the Vedas. The Veda Purva Bhaga that deals with Karma Kanda, the ritualistic portion. And since the later portion deal with the Jnana Bhaga, the Upanishads are placed at the end of the Vedas, at the later portion of Vedas. And since they deal with Jnana, the necessity of a teacher to impart this knowledge has been considered as a must. Otherwise, one can run the risk of misunderstanding and also perhaps misinterpreting the scriptures. And that is why in all Upanishads, they are all structured in such a way as a dialogue between a guru or many gurus. There are still a lot of
lectures.
Somebody's speaker phone is on. Please turn it off. Please turn off your speaker phone.
Okay.
So that is why all Upanishads are structured as a dialogue between a guru and many gurus and shishyas, many shishyas. It's a constructive dialogue called samvada. Samvada is a constructive dialogue. For example, if you take Mundaka Upanishad, it's a dialogue between Saunaka and Angiras. And Kathopanishad also is a dialogue between a guru and a Shishya. In this case, the guru happens to be Yamadharmaraja, the lord of death, and Nachiketas is the disciple. Prashna Upanishad, there are six dialogues and six disciples, all put together as Prashna Upanishad. One teacher and many students, Pippaladamuni. So there are so many instances where, for example, in Chandogya Upanishad, there are many gurus and many shishyas, many dialogues, all together, one Upanishad, but so many dialogues, so many side stories, so many things. So Upanishads can be one dialogue or many dialogues between guru and shishyas. Even though there are four main Vedas, there are many branches for each of the Vedas. According to some texts, there are supposed to be 1,131 branches. Of all the four Vedas put together, the Rig Veda had 21 branches, Yajurveda had 108 branches, Samaveda had 1000 branches, and Atharva Veda had 9 branches. But all these various branches, we call it recensions, or shakas, they all withered over a period of time. And today we have only 10 branches for all the four Vedas put together. Many of them, most of them are lost. And among the 10, only still two only are nearly complete. Many of them are incomplete. So in every shaka, every branch, there used to be one Upanishad. And if you think that each shaka had one Upanishad, then for the 1131 shakas, there were 1131 Upanishads. Since no one can master all the 1131, 108 of them were taken as the essence or the sara of all those Upanishads. And of those 108, 10 became very popular because of Adi Shankaracharya's commentary on them. Isha, Kena, Katha, Prashna, Mundaka, Mandukya, Tithirihi, Aitareyam cha, Chandogyam, Brihadaranyakam tatha. So these are all the 10 Upanishads. Isha Upanishad, Kena Upanishad, Katha Upanishad, Prashna Upanishad, Mundaka Upanishad, Mandukya Upanishad, Taittiriya Upanishad, Aitareya Upanishad, Chandogya Upanishad, and Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. All these 10. For all these 10 Upanishads, Adi Shankara has written detailed commentaries. And most of the commentaries of later acharyas, they are also based to some extent or to some significant extent on Adi Shankara's commentary. So if a person studies these 10, then he can understand the others also, since the central theme of teaching is same in all Upanishads, which is what? Jivatma Paramatma Aikyam, the oneness of the Jiva and the Paramatma. Only the methodology of communication only is different in different Upanishads. It is like, for example, when we cook with one rice, we make, you know, tamarind rice, we make lemon rice, we make dahi rice, same rice, but made in different forms, presented in different forms. So because human mind always looks for variety, approaches, examples. For example, Panchakosha Viveka is one. Drik Drishya Viveka is another one. Sharira Traya Viveka, that is another one. So all these things are various approaches to the same subject. So if I say I will teach only one Upanishad all the time, then people may not be interested. For example, after teaching Taittiriya Upanishad, I say, okay, the central theme of all Upanishads is only Taittiriya Upanishad, that's enough. Now, because I also said I will start Katha Upanishad, people would like to know what is there in Katha Upanishad that is different from what is given in Taittiriya Upanishad. So more people are interested in that. So now I say, I will teach Katha Upanishad. Now see, and then if you really see the number of people who have registered for these webinars, within 2 days, I had over 100 registrations for this Katha Upanishad now, because it's a new thing. So it teaches also the Jivatma Paramatma Aikyam only at the same way as Taittiriya Upanishad had taught, which we finished actually last webinar. So the angles can be different. For one student, a particular angle might appeal more. For the other one, another angle might appeal more. So these 10 Upanishads are taken from all the four Vedas. And since Shankaracharya wants to convey that all the Vedas talk about the same central theme, he wrote commentaries on all these 10 Upanishads. And of these 10, we have covered actually Taittiriya Upanishad alone of the Yajurveda. And we are going to study the Katha Upanishad, which also belongs to the Yajurveda. And Yajurveda itself has two branches. One is called Krishna Yajurveda, and the other one is called Shukla Yajurveda. If you roughly translate into English, Krishna Yajurveda can be called as Black Yajurveda, and Shukla Yajurveda can be called as White Yajurveda, even though black and white have no meaning as such. So Katha Upanishad belongs to the Kataka Shaka of Krishna Yajurveda, whereas the Taittiriya Upanishad belongs to the Taittiriya Shaka of Krishna Yajurveda. And here Katha Upanishad belongs to the Kataka Shaka of Krishna Yajurveda. This Katha Upanishad, since it belongs to the Kataka Shaka, is also called Kataka Upanishad or Katha Upanishad. That is how the name has come. So the name of the Upanishad need not be based on the name of the Shaka at all the time. Even though in this case it belongs to the same Shaka, it need not be. For example, if you take another Upanishad called Kena Upanishad, it does not belong to Kena Shaka, but belongs to Talavakara Shaka and begins with the word Kena. Because it starts with the word Kena, it was termed as Kena Upanishad. Here the Upanishad is based on the name of the Shaka, from which the Upanishad was taken, that is Katakashaka Katopanishad. So this Upanishad also has got two chapters or adhyayas, and each chapter has three sections known as vallis. For example, in the Taittiriya Upanishad, we had Siksha Valli, Brahmananda Valli, and Bhrigu Valli. And here also, we are going to have so many vallis in two adhyayas. So totally, there are six vallis, three vallis for each adhyaya, about 120 plus so many shlokas or verses. We have to see all of them. So like any other Upanishad, this also begins with a Shanti Pata, a Shanti Mantra, unique to Krishna Yajurveda. So the Shanti Pata is not based on the Upanishad, but the Veda to which it belongs. So when we recite the Shanti Pata, one should not think that the Shanti Pata belongs to Katopanishad. It belongs to Krishna Yajurveda, but because this comes under Krishna Yajurveda, the same Shanti Pata is used. For example, all other Veda Upanishads, like Mundaka Upanishad, Mandukya Upanishad, Prashna Upanishad, they all have the different Shanti Pata called Bhadram Karnebihi. Bhadram Karnebhi Shrunuyama Devaha. That is a Shanti Pata for those Upanishads. And all Samaveda Upanishads, for all of them, Apyayantu Mamangani. That is like the Shanti Pata mantras for the Keno Upanishad, Chandogya Upanishad, which all belong to the Samaveda. So all Krishna Yajurveda Upanishads have mostly the same Shanti Pata. And the purpose of Shanti Pata, I already mentioned during our Taittiriya Upanishad lecture, just for those who might not have listened to that earlier, the purpose of the Shanti Pata is to remove any obstacle which would hinder the study of the Upanishad. We have now taken upon study of this Upanishad. So we want to make sure that the study continues without any obstacle. Not only the student should be able to continue with the study, it should be interesting to them. And also for the teacher to be able to continue with the teaching, because he should not get sick or anything like that. So the prayer for both. So the aim is jnanam. And so the Shanti Pata is for vichara vigna nivrityartham. So that's what we should understand. When we recite the Shanti Pata, the Shanti Mantra is meant for Vichara Vigna Nivrityartham, for any vignas, obstacles that might arise to hinder the Vichara, the inquiry, the understanding of this Upanishad. So the obstacles are generally twofold. The visible obstacles, which we call this as Drishta Pratibandha. Drishta Pratibandhas are those which are like, for example, rain. You want to come to some class somewhere, the rains come and obstruct you. So we can perhaps take some steps for them. You can have some umbrella, you can have a raincoat, all those can be there perhaps. They are called Drishta Pratibandhas. And there are unseen Pratibandhas. They are called Adrishta Pratibandhas, invisible obstacles. So to remove the hidden obstacles, we have only one method. And that method is to pray. For the visible obstacles, we can adopt some techniques. Whereas for the invisible, we have to only pray and appeal to the Lord to remove those obstacles. Because for the Lord, nothing is hidden. Things may be hidden only to us. For the Lord, nothing is hidden. So he can take care of those obstacles because he is Sarvajnaha. So we seek the grace of the Lord so that we have no obstacles and we will be able to complete this Katopanishad text. So Shantihi means for Vigna Nivrittihi, for removal of obstacles, and Pata means chanting. So this is Vigna Nivritti means for removal of all obstacles. So Shanti Pataha means a chanting for the removal of all obstacles which will hinder my study of this Upanishad. So with this, let us start the Katha Upanishad and let us start with the Shanti Pata. Sahana Bhavatu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. This is a small and popular and very relevant Shanti Pata for study, which we have seen earlier also. So in the other Shanti Patas, the prayer is generally in a general way. For example, if you take Bhadram Karnebihi, if you take that Shanti Pata, Bhadram Karnebhi Shruniyama Devaha, it means what? Oh Lord, let me listen to noble and auspicious things, a general prayer. So it does not particularly deal with that study of Katopanishad or Taittiriya Upanishad or for that matter, whatever may be the study. So they are general for physical, mental health, wealth, long life. They are all general prayers. So this is a unique mantra meant for the study purpose in this case. So we have to imagine, for example, a scenario where the teacher and the student, they are sitting together and chant this Shanti Mantra. The prayer, how does it go? Saha nau avatu. Saha means he. He is a pronoun. Who is he? The pronoun can stand for anyone. The pronoun can stand for Rama, pronoun can stand for Krishna. So a pronoun is relevant only when used with a noun. But here the prayer begins with a pronoun. So when no reference is particularly made, it refers only to one thing, namely the Lord, the God or Bhagavan. So without him, nothing can. Actually, in Tamil also they say, Avaninri Anuvum Asayad. Without him, not even an atom can move. So by the word he, when no specific reference is made, it means God. That is why Shankaracharya in his Gita commentary, he gives a grammatical explanation also. In Sanskrit, a pronoun is called the Sarvanama. Pronoun is called Sarvanama because it can be used for any noun. Even for a dog, he or she we can use. So Shankaracharya says that there is only one word which can refer to anything, namely Ishwaraha. So because everything being Ishwara, the word Ishwara can apply to any nama. That is what Shankaracharya says. So Sarvanama is Bhagavan Nama. And because Bhagavan alone is Sarvam. Sarvam Vishnumayam Jagat. All animate and inanimate beings, they all can be called Ishwaraha only in our culture. So Saha. Saha is Sarvanama here. Bhagavan, Vishnu, Shiva, anybody. Doesn't matter for that matter. Any Ishta Devata. And let that Bhagavan now avatu. Sahana avatu. Now avatu. Sahana avatu. Now avatu. When you split, it becomes now avatu. Now means us, two, we two. It's a dual number in Sanskrit. There in Sanskrit, there are three numbers. Singular, dual and plural. Whereas in English, we have no such problem. Singular and plural only. So here now means we two. So the prayer is, let the Lord protect us two. So that is the prayer. Now, why should the student refer to two? And which two he means? One is myself. Naturally, the student, everyone wants to protect themselves. That is true. So that is one is myself. And who is the other one? Here, the other one is the teacher. Since he is the one who is teaching me. So the guru and Shishya. Then what about other Shishyas who may be learning together? And so how can we use a dual number then when there are so many other Shishyas? Then we should use only a plural number. A particular Shishya is interested in himself and the Guru, and the other particular Shishyas also should be interested in himself or herself and the Guru. So when they all chant the Shanti Patha together, each one has prayed for not only himself or herself and also the Guru. So may the Lord protect us both. Sahana Bhavatu. And the letter Ha is for emphasis in Sanskrit generally to emphasize. And what do we mean by protection? The Lord protects us. What do we mean by protection? Shankaracharya says, here the context is the study of scriptures. That is what we are doing now. Not any other context of life. That is, there the obstruction could be disease, could be so many other things, for in all other things. But in Vedantic class, protection will be what? Protection is for receiving the knowledge without wrong understanding and distraction. Because these are subjects which are very intricate. We should not have wrong understanding and misunderstanding. So in the class, what are the enemies? The enemies in the class are lack of attention. Attention span is very small for most people. That also when they come to the class, it may take for them about a few minutes to settle. They have to first, actually in group classes, now we are having webinars, people are listening from their homes. When I used to have classes in for people to come together, they come first, a few minutes will be spent maybe in at least exchanging each other's, you know, have you come this, all kinds of things, you know, socialization a little bit. And then class, and after some time, you know, the attention span may be slowly started to deteriorate. And towards the end of the class, they will be watching the watch as many times as possible, perhaps. So within the 30, 40 minutes, whatever is heard and retained, that will be with them, and that may be mostly confusion. So these are all enemies for a student. So, O Lord, may you protect us from wrong understanding. Not just only what I like to hear. I don't want to have any filtered listening. These are all obstacles. When the teacher gives something, you don't want to filter the listening. So in what way the Lord should protect the guru then? Guru also should be free from distraction. He should also have the capacity to deliver the subject properly in the way that I can understand. The most difficult subject here, Vedanta. Then Sahanau Bhunaktu. The word Bhunaktu also is same meaning like the Avatu. Protect also means protection. And why we should repeat, why the Upanishad should repeat again Avatu and Bhunaktu? Shankaracharya says very beautifully. Prathamam Jnana Pradhanena Avatu and Anantaram Jnana Phala Pradhanena Bhunaktu. So not only I should receive the teaching also must penetrate, soak my personality. Look at the way how our rishis have structured even prayers. Not only I should be able to listen, it should go into every one of my blood cells so that it will be part of me all the time. Then only we can say this learning has been complete. So my personality should get transformed by this learning. Otherwise, what is the benefit of this learning? I got the knowledge, it is in my head, I can give a lecture for several hours, but if my character and inner personality, if they continue to be as it was originally, what is the use of this knowledge? So here is not, the class is not for getting a certificate or anything like MPhil or PhD or any of those things. We want to transform ourselves so that I will not be a pain for myself and to others. I will be a better person. I will be an integrated person. I will be an Yukta Purushaha. I will be Atmavan. I will be Vashi. I will justify the name human. So all those things are all implied. So our aim is transformation. Without the study, it will be worthless. So may the Lord protect me by transforming my personality akin to, because my goal is moksha. That is the only goal. And for transformation, whatever obstacles are there, let the Lord protect me from those. So like some deep worries, emotional problems, wounds, they are all there. Someone has cheated me, for example, of 1 lakh rupees long time ago. The wound is so deep because I trusted him so much, but he ditched me so much that I cannot even smile for the rest of my life. If people have to take that stand, they will cause themselves so much of problems. So a balloon can fly high in the air, very high in the air, but there are hundreds of strings to tie it down to the ground, right? Similarly to the mind also, there are hundreds of worries to tie it down. If the balloon has to freely fly, how many strings we have to cut? We have to cut all the strings. Even if you leave one string, it is going to still bind the balloon. So these are all obstacles called kashayas. People may be familiar with the word kashayam in these things, but in Sanskrit, these are kashayas. So only a light-minded person can enjoy atmajnanam. Mind should be free from any such strings. Should be pure, should be free from any such strings at all. For that mind only, when you teach to them Aham Brahmasmi, it will make some sense to them. Otherwise, they will be only mere words without having any deep understanding at all. So may the Lord protect us. So Jnana Pradhanena Avatu, Jnana Pala Pradhanena Avatu. Okay, then the next prayer is Saha Viryam Karavavahai. The student is very careful here. You cannot put the whole responsibility only on the Lord. So he says, what will I do? Because our success not only depends on Ishwara Anugraha, but also Atma Anugraha. Without our effort, Bhagavan cannot help us. Bhagavan can help only when we decide to transform. If we decide not to, even the omnipotent God cannot help us. That is why the student says, let us put forth our effort. This is called Purushartha. In Sanskrit, this is called Purushartha. The first two lines talked about Ishwara Kripa. The third line talks about Atma Prayatnam. Free will has to be used here actually. We cannot be taking the approach of fatalistic philosophy when you come to Vedanta class. It does not accept fatalism. We cannot say, oh, everything is based on destiny. It is all my fate. What can I do? Vedanta doesn't approve any of those things at all. Because Vedanta does not consider that moksha is determined by God. Moksha is decided by me and assisted by God. That is why moksha comes under a purushartha. Dharma, artha, kama and moksha. So purushartha means human choice. The choice of every individual. So moksha is not God's choice, but only a human choice. So the student says, let me choose to attend these classes. Let me carefully listen and let me do perhaps the homework also. And the teacher also has to do his homework. So the student says, may he put the necessary effort. Viryam here means effort on the part of the student and the teacher for both of them. And having put forth the effort, Tejasvinav Aditam Astu. Not only I must receive the teaching, I should also be able to retain the teaching. Reception and retention, both together is called Medha Shakti. In Sanskrit, we call Grahana Dharana Shakti. Grahanam is reception and Dharanam is retention. So receiving and retaining. So may our learning remain bright in the mind and green in the memory all the time. Tejasvi means bright and fresh. In short, may I not forget the teaching, whatever I have learned. That is why during Upanayana Samskara also, where he will start the Veda Adhyayanam, one of the mantras is where he has to cover his ears and he should say, Brahmana Anistha. Ani means plug, you know, ears and like ear plug, Anistha. And Brahmanaha means Vedic knowledge. So he addresses the Lord, the boy, the child addresses the Lord. You should remain as earplugs. What type of earplugs? One-way earplugs. And what are those? If it is a both-way earplug, it will go in and you will come out also quickly. So whatever I listen and learn, that should enter into the heart and should not leave out of me. So what a beautiful player, you know, even during the samskaras. So Brahmana Anistha. So Tejasvi now Aditam Astu. Aditam means study here. Tejasvi Astu. And then Ma Vidvishavahai. Let us not have any strain in our emotional relationship. Dvesha. Dvesha is hatred. Let us not have any such dislike, hatred and all between the teacher and student. Here it means any strain or misunderstanding. Let the relationship be one of mutual love and respect. Guru's attitude towards the student should be one of compassion and care. Shishya's attitude towards the guru should be one of faith and respect. And that the guru's teaching will not mislead me and should have reverence. That the guru's teachings are sacred because guru doesn't say anything of his own. He learned from his guru who was taught by his guru. So he is coming from a parampara of gurus. And they all have been talking about what the scriptures have been telling. They are not telling anything original themselves. They may help us understand them in a better way by giving some anecdotes and examples. But the same subject, the same way that was that is taught in the scriptures, that's what they are teaching. So as a repository of this teaching, I should have reference to the guru. So Shraddha and Bhakti should be there. Because even psychologists, they say that any communication will take place only when there is a rapport in relationship between two individuals. That is why in many families, if you really say, most of them, initial years are one of mostly quarrel, most of the time. And then what happens? Whatever, actually here we don't see those things because in joint families and all, people have lot of give and take. They have to go through lot of understanding, lot of accommodation and all that thing in those years. So whatever the other person says, they can, even on normal thing, they can misunderstand. For example, if you ask a simple question, when did you come? Then they may interpret it as, oh, are you saying that I have been here for so long that I should get out? People ask such kinds of questions because they are all so strained, very strained relationships. So even the most innocent topic can lead to a very explosive situation because people cannot understand how to accommodate each other. So this statement just triggered an emotional strain which was potentially there all the time. So a family even breaks down because of that when communication breaks down. So in those families, we can see either the families do not talk to each other or even the slightest conversation leads to flare or extremely explosive situations. And so we find either no communications or quarrel. That is what is happening all the time. So in such atmospheres, nothing takes place and the greatest victims are the children only. And in those days in the Gurukulam system, the teacher was like father and the students were like his children. And they found that the Gurukulam atmosphere should be one of understanding, love, mutual care, compassion, all those. So not only among the disciples, but also between Guru and Shishyas. And so he says, let our relationship be never strained. Om Shantihi, Shantihi, Shantihi. The Shanti is repeated thrice because the obstacles from three sources can be eliminated. We don't want obstacles from all these three sources. The first source is what? Myself, through physical obstacles, like, you know, bodily strain. For example, today I have come to teach. I have a bad throat. I have cough. So I don't want that to hinder my lecture today. So these are all things which are all from me. And there could be mental distractions could be there. This is called Adhyatmika Vignaha, over which we have some control. For example, we can have some controls on that. Then the second is Adi Bhautika Vignaha, the obstacles coming from the immediate surroundings over which we have lesser control than earlier. And the last one is Adi Daivika Vignaha, which is not caused by the surrounding human beings, but the devatas in the form of natural forces like rain, thunder, lightning, earthquake, all those things over which the human beings have no control at all. So three shantis are chanted for freedom from Adhyatmika, Adi Bhautika and Adi Daivika Vignas, obstacles. So this is the Shanti Pata. Now on the text of Kathopanishad begins. As we said earlier, the Upanishad has two chapters or two adhyayas, and each chapter has three sections or vallis. Each section is called valli. And thus we have three vallis in the first chapter. And now we will enter into the Prathamadhyaye Prathama Valli. The first valli, first section of the first chapter or the first section. And the actual teaching of the Vedanta, that is going to start only later. Only the introduction is going to be given, the entire first valli. And the first 17 verses of the second valli, they are going to be only introductory portion. No Vedanta is going to come here. A story and a few verses along those lines. And the actual Vedanta starts from first chapter, second valli, 18th verse onwards only. Actually, in Bhagavad Gita lectures, we had already told there, the actual teaching started only in the second chapter, 11th verse onwards. The entire first chapter and the 10 slokas of the second chapter, they were all only introduction. And here also we have the introduction through a story. Gita also we had a story, this Pandava Kaurava story. Here also we are having a story. So through the story, the ground is prepared for the teaching. So the heaviest topic is going to be taught, for which a story is used as a ground. And in the story, the following points are going to be highlighted. So as we look at the story, we have to look at that story along the lines of these three points. The first topic is the glory of Brahma Vidya, self-knowledge, its greatness, Mahima. And the second topic highlighted is the necessity of a guru. The necessity of a guru is important because the teacher, without the guidance of a guru, one cannot get self-knowledge. One cannot attempt to say, I will read from a book, I will listen here and there. One has to get it from a guru only. One cannot decipher the Upanishadic teaching, and so the importance of the guru is needed. I cannot say I can take a dictionary and also go through the meanings of all the words. I can read Sanskrit. I can interpret this. Very, very difficult. And the third topic is the qualifications of a guru. Who is fit to be a guru, a guide to teach Vedanta? That is very important. Which is extremely important because an unqualified guru will do more disservice only. Na buddhi bedam janayet, that is what Krishna said. They will cause all these confusions and that will be more a disservice only. So guruhu guroho lakshanani, the characteristics of a competent guide, that is the third topic. And the fourth and the most important topic is the qualifications of a shishya, the student. Shishya lakshanani. What are the characteristics of a student? In whose presence alone the self-knowledge is now going to take place? And in whose absence the self-knowledge cannot take place? And even if it takes place, it will not be much found, it will not be as much of use at all. So the four topics are Brahma Vidya Mahima, Guru Apeksha, Guroho Lakshanani, Shishya Lakshanani. So these are the four topics. So these four ideas are indirectly conveyed through a story. And while dealing with the student's qualifications, many important values are also highlighted. And even though we have classified it into these four topics, the Upanishad itself does not deal with it in this order, in this systematic manner. These four ideas are strewn all over the Upanishad, all over this topic. But it is not topic-wise divided, but mixed up in the first 1.5 verses. And the Upanishad starts with a story, but we do not know whether it is a fact or fiction or a mixture of both. We do not know any of those, like most of the movies, you know. Our focus is not on the veracity of the story. Our focus is on the implied teaching given through the story. That is what we should concentrate, focus upon. So having grasped the implications, we have to drop the story part. So let us not hang over on the story part, because in most of the lectures, I may have given some example, and that example alone stays, and the context on which the example was given, people generally tend to forget. So that should not be the case. So the story should be dropped. We should not question about the relevance of the story and all that. We have to only take the elements from the story, what should be remembered. So with that, actually, now let us start the first verse, the first shloka. For those people who may have the text, you can follow with me. Otherwise, you can hear. Ushan havai vajashravasaha sarva vedasam dadau tasya hanachiketa nama putra asa. As a part of the story, the Upanishad is introducing a Vaidika Brahmana who lived the life prescribed by the Vedas. He's a Vedic follower, a strict Vedic follower, Anushtanas and all that. And the name of that Brahmana here is Vajashravasaha. So that is his name, Vajashravasaha. So Vajashravasaha is the son of the Vajashravasaha is the son of Vajashravas. The name itself indicates what type of person he is. He was a follower of the Vedic tradition, the Veda Purva Bhaga, namely the Karmakanda portion, about the way of life, a particular way of life that is important for understanding and Vedantic learning and teaching. So he has to go through all that. So Vedic way of life prepares a person for the understanding of Vedantic philosophy later. So Veda Purva Bhaga is the foundation for Vedantic building to come up later. And Veda Purva, that prescribes the particular lifestyle, and Vajashravasa was following that lifestyle, this particular Brahmana. And what is that lifestyle, if you really ask? He was doing lot of yajna activities, so much of rituals. Pancha Maha Yajnas he was performing every day. And what are these five Maha Yajnas? Deva Yajna. Deva Yajna is worship of gods. Pitru Yajna, worship of forefathers. Brahma Yajna, worship and propagation of scriptures. And Manushya Yajna, service to fellow human beings, social service. And Bhuta Yajna, taking care of animals and plants and the ecosystem. These are supposed to be the duties of every individual every day to be followed. So if you really see, everything is only based on our relationship with the society where we live in. So we cannot just say, I am only alone in this place. We draw so much from this society. We should always ask ourselves, what do I give back to the society? I should always be able to express my gratitude to what I am getting from all sources. So in simple language, actually Krishna tells it as an yajna way of life. It is a religious way of life. And what is the uniqueness of this yajna way of life? There is a lot of dhanam or sharing. In this way of life, we have to share a lot with so many people and beings. So there is a lot of dhanam. So Vajashravasa was a person who did not want to enjoy everything for himself, but led a life of sharing always. And how do we know that? Shankaracharya says the very name indicates that Vajaha means annam, and Shravaha means fame, popularity. So Vajashravasa means one who is famous for his annadhanam, for giving food to everybody, a generous, a sharing, a very selfless person is this Brahmana. So annadana nimittam shravaha yasya saha Vajashravasa. So his father also was well known for Annadanam, and so was the son. This Brahmana's father also was well known for Annadanam, and this Brahmana also same way. So such a Brahmana lived long time before. So there was such a person like this. And often this Danam is part of varieties of yajnas. When you do an yajna, this is part of the yajna. So for example, as part of the puja, charity is given as food, as money, as clothing, as land, as cattle, all those things. And even in those days, marriage was called a type of kanyaka dhanam only, and an yajna. So this Vajashravasaka performed many such yagas and had decided to perform one big yaga that was mentioned in the scriptures. Yaga means a sacrifice, an yajna. And that yaga, which he wanted to do, was called Vishwajit Yaga. These are all the story part, understand that. So Vishwajit Yaga, an unique sacrifice in which one has to give as dakshina everything one possesses. Whatever one has, one is supposed to give all of them away. It is as good as taking sannyasa, because at the end of the yajna, he will not possess anything. He will not be left with anything. So, and Vajashravasa also decided to perform this yajna. And in the Vedic tradition, all these sadhanas can be performed in two different ways. This also we have mentioned in many of our lectures. Whether an yajna, pilgrimage, japa, homa, whatever it is, they can be all done in two different ways, which are known as sakama or nishkama sadhana. Sakama sadhana or nishkama sadhana. Sakama sadhana means a practice for material benefit, to get punyam, for better enjoyment, for getting better name, wealth, children, not only in this life, but also in the next life. So it's like a punyam credit card. I want to build the credit balance in my punyam credit card. So when punyam are exhausted, again, back to, they will come to Sikshine Punye, Martyalogam Vishanti. That's what Krishna says. After the punyam credit card exhausted, they have to come back again, take another life and build up the credit. So any punyam can be either as material punyam or spiritual punyam. When I seek material punyam, it is called sakama karma. And if I am not interested in material punyam at all, then it will be available for spiritual benefit, anything connected with moksha. And what are the things connected with moksha? First, I require a pure mind. So punyam can be encashed for chitta shuddhi, viveka, vairagya, all those things I can gain. And suppose I have all these, I can encash it for getting a good guru, because a guru is needed. Guru praptihi, conducive atmosphere to learn. That is also a result of what? Spiritual punyam only. So a good guru, having all these mental abilities and also an environment to learn very well, all these things are all the outcome of punya. So all come under nishkama karma. Of these two types of karmas, which one was Vajashravasa doing? The Upanishad clarifies it very clearly. Ushan. Ushan means sakamena. Interested in getting material benefit in the form of Swargaloka. So after this life, this Brahmana want to go to Swargaloka. And that is the reason he wanted to perform this big yajna called this Vishwajit Yajna. Ushan. Ushan means Swargolokam Kamyamanaha. Desiring to attain the heavens. Havai. Havai means emphasis. Upanishad, actually it is trying to reiterate. So with such a desire, Vajashravasa performed this yajna. And the yajna also was completed. He performed it very well. And at the end of the yajna, the final part of any religious karma is dakshina. Till the dakshina is given, the yajna is not complete, according to our scriptures. And it is an integral part of the sacrifice. So scriptures pointed out, if not given, the yajna is incomplete and will not give any phalam, the benefit. So we cannot negotiate with the Lord on this. Because we have gone through the ritual means, so no negotiation. So without appropriate dakshina, the whole yajna will become tamasic yajna. So Krishna defines tamasic yajna in the 17th chapter, vidihinam, mantrahinam, adakshinam. So without giving the dakshina, if a person performs yajna, it comes under tamasic yajna and will not give any benefit at all. So to the most important point is, the priest may or may not ask for dakshina. But I want my yajna to be complete, so I have to give dakshina. So that should be the attitude of the yajamana or the karta who does the yajna. And this rule Vajashravasa knows, because he is a learned pandit. He is not an ordinary person. So for Vishwajit yajna, everything should be given. So sarva vedasam dadao. That's what the Upanishad says. Vedasam means wealth. All types of wealth. Movable, immovable, everything. Whatever he has in his possession. Sarva vedasam. And when these dakshinas were given to the priest, his son was watching this event. The son is observing the father doing all this yajna and giving dakshina to all these people. He is watching. And who was his son? Tasyaha Nachiketa Nama Putraha Asa. To that Vajashravasa Tasyaha, the great Vaidika Brahmana, who he is, was a son known as Nachiketaha. Nachiketaha in English, because the visarga is not there, we say is Nachiketas. But in Sanskrit, it is Nachiketaha. So it is Sakaranda Pulingaha, Nachiketa Shabdaha, Nachiketaha, Nachiketasau, Nachiketasaha. So like Chandramaha, Vedaha, Durvasa, like that. So he had a son, Putraha, by name Nachiketas. The name of that son is called Nachiketas. And Nachiketas, he is the hero of Kathopanishad. So this name is introduced now. Nachiketas is the hero of Upanishad, because he is going to be the student of Kathopatanish. So he is the student who learned this from Yamadharmaraja, which we are all learning now. So the Upanishad indirectly indicates the family background of Nachiketas. What type of student he is. In which atmosphere he has grown up. He was exposed to Vedas. He was exposed to rituals, Annadanam, and all that, Swarnadanam, all those various types of Danam. So, to indicate, he is a fortunate Vaidika boy. He is not born in some place where he doesn't have the opportunity to get exposed to all these. He is a fortunate Vaidika boy. And if I don't have faith in the Veda Purva Bhaga itself, it is not possible to have faith in the Veda Antabhaga. I have to have faith in the Veda Purva Bhaga. Because faith has to grow in me. I cannot suddenly develop faith. Even on, for example, friends, etc., you move and develop Shraddha. After some time, it develops so strongly. So in our tradition, initially we are exposed to Veda Purva Bhaga, the primary portion, the former portion, to develop Shraddha, our faith, and also our sincerity. Then he can really, prepare himself for Veda Anta Bhaga, which teaches very, very intricate subjects. So a religious lifestyle, Shraddha, for such a person, Shraddha becomes easier. So Nachiketas has the advantage of being born in a family of Vedic life. And such a Nachiketas is watching the dakshinas being given to the priests. So the bigger the yaga, more are the number of priests. And what Nachiketas saw and what is given, they are all given in the next shloka. As he is watching. Tagumha kumaragum santam dakshinasu niyamanasu shraddha vivesha somayan somanyata. So what is the age of his son actually, Nachiketas? Tagumha kumaragum santam. He was a kumara. Kumara means boy of less than 10 years old. So between ages 7 to 10, maybe 8, 9. That is why when the boy's upanayanam is done, when they do Upanayana Samskara, he is supposed to take food from his mother's hand first. Because after the thread ceremony, he will go to the Gurukulam and live on Bhiksha only in the teacher's house. At that time, he has no choice. So the Upanayana ceremony is the last ceremony for the boy to eat whatever he wants from his mother's hands. That is called Kumara Bhojanam. So during Upanayanam, there is this ritual called Kumara Bhojanam. The word Kumara is given for the boy who is getting Upanayanam of 7 to 8 years. And this Nachiketas was a small boy, but he was a well-informed boy. Even though a small boy, well-informed boy, he had been brought up in that lifestyle. And he must have learned a lot of things from his father, which is considered very, very great, called, you know, all these Niyama Adhyayanam, all those things he might have learned. What are the do's and don'ts, everything he knows. So he was a well-informed boy. He knew certain basic principles and the results also. And what are those basic principles? We said earlier that all karmas can be done in two ways. either sakama or nishkama, material or spiritual benefit. Basic rule is, when done for material benefit, all rules must be observed properly. If you want to do a karma, desiring something to come out of that karma, then there is no compromise. You should be done 100% correct. I cannot say, let me do 70% correct and let also the benefit also let it be 70%. No. If you don't do it correctly, we have to repeat it. Or big prayachitams have to be done. So even if one violation, it will not produce the result. That is the biggest danger in ritualistic approach. So in any step, if one makes a mistake, the scriptures themselves prescribe a prayaschitta karma, a remedial ritual. For example, what are the oblations and their order? Because you cannot do oblation in any order. Even if an order is changed, a prayaschitta is to be done. So, and the remedial karma also is not what I like. There are also rules for that. For example, they will say 1008 times chant Gayatri Mantra, offer extra oblations, offer extra dakshina, so many things. For example, in Sandhya Vandanam, if it is not done at appropriate time, then there is a Kalatita Prayaschittam. Another extra argument has to be given. Some places the remedy is simple, or some places it could be complicated, or it could be even to repeat the entire ritual. So Sakama Karma rules are very, very important. But in Nishkama Karma, if unknowingly, if any mistakes are committed, it is still considered fine if it is done unintentionally, unknowingly. So this Krishna tells in the third chapter actually of Gita. He says, Neha Vikramanashosti Pratyavayo na Vidyate Swalpamapyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mahato Bhayad. Krishna says that. But in the case of Vishwajit Yaga, which this particular Brahmana is performing, which is a Sakama Yaga, Nachiketas knew that his father is doing this for Swargaloka. He wants to gain Swargaloka. And if it is a Sakama Karma, all rules should be followed and all Dakshinas should be given appropriately. So Nachiketas remembers this rule at this juncture of distribution of Dakshina. Overpowered by Dakshina, he is looking at it. So Dakshinasu, Niyamanasu, Satsu. As the Dakshinas were being taken by the various priests, Shraddha Avivesha, faith in the rules of rituals, which were in his mind before. Nachiketas knows these rules already. So having these rules in his mind, he is observing the Dakshinas given by the father. So when he is looking at them, all these rules, all these thoughts, they all got activated, triggered in the mind. Even though Kumaragum Santam, he was only a small boy. He is only a Kumara. So because maturity and knowledge, they are not, need not be proportional to age. So such young, there are so many young people who are young in age, but mature in disposition. They are called Jnana Vriddhaha. There are a lot of people who are aged. They are Vayo Vriddhaha because they are all elder by age. But there may be a lot of people who may be elder by knowledge, even though they may not be elder by age. So these are all Jnana Vriddhaha. And Nachiketas is of the former kind. And so what did he do? Saha Manyata. He began to think of his father's lot. What will happen to my father by giving such dakshina? That was his worry. What was his thinking process? That is given actually in the next shloka. If you have the text, please follow with me. Pitodaka jagdatrinam dugdadoham nirindriyaha ananda namate lokaha tansa gacchatita datate. Even as we read these shlokas, we should remember the qualifications of Nachiketas. In the second shloka itself, his Shraddha was pointed out. So in the Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampatti, which we have already seen in our Tattvabodha lectures, which are the essential qualifications for a person to pursue the Jnana Marga, the Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampatti, Shraddha is in that, which is very important. So he already has that. Indirectly, the Kathopanishad teaches us Shraddha. To gain self-knowledge, if you want to gain self-knowledge, most important ingredient is faith, Shraddha. Shraddha means what? Guru Vedanta Vakyadishu Vishwasaha Shraddha. Whatever the teacher teaches, they should have the unflinching faith in the teaching, because the teaching is what in akin to what the scriptures give, and that is what is defined as Shraddha by Shankaracharya. So this third verse is actually, one should consider it as within quotation. The Upanishad is giving the thinking process of Nachiketas. And what this, when did this thought arise to him? When he saw some cows are also taken for Dakshina. The father has so many cows. He has given a lot of cows already. And some more cows are being brought in to give us Dakshina. Then cows were an important part of wealth those days. If you read actually Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Janaka, he repeatedly promises cows alone as Dakshina so many times. So, Soham Bhagavate Sahasram Dadami Atha Urdvam Vimukshayai Vagbruhi. So, he asked more. I am going to give you more and more cows. So, and in the Vishwajit Yaga also, these cows were driven to the Yagashala to be given as Dakshina. And Nachiketas observed the status of all these cows. Whatever cows were brought, he is looking at the status of all of them. And to his utter dismay, he found that these cows were useless, were miserable cows. Whoever receives them, they won't have any benefit at all. On the other hand, they may have to spend perhaps a lot of money and effort to protect them. So Nachiketas thinks that it cannot be a proper Dakshina at all. So here we get a description of those miserable cows in this shloka. And what are their conditions? Pita Udakaha. They are so feeble that they do not have any strength even to drink water. They have drunk water for the last time. Cannot take any more. If they want to take one more sip, they don't have energy to gulp it. And what about their eating grass? Jagda Trinaha Gavaha. Each word is actually an adjective for the cows. So they cannot take, they have taken the last bunch of grass already. They cannot take any more. They are incapable. Pitodakaha Gavaha, Jagdadrinaha Gavaha. All are actually Bahurvi Samasa. And Pitam Udakam Yabihitaha. And again, so Jagdam Bakshitam Trunam Yabihitaha. So they have taken the last bunch of grass. They means they cannot take any more. And what about milk? Dugda Doha. The last drop of milk also they have given. They cannot give any more milk. We cannot get even one more drop from them. So they are utterly useless cows. Then can they at least give birth to a calf? No. Nirindriyaha. Their reproductive faculty also is gone. So such cows. So here Indriya means is Prajanana Shaktihi. The power of reproduction. Indriya means Prajanana Shakti, and such miserable cows were to be given to the priest. That what Nachiketas, he is looking at it and he is very disturbed, because if such Dakshina is given, the Yajna will become deficient. And for performing such Yajna, father will not get Swargaloka, but he will get only Narakam. So Taha Datate Anandaha Lokaha Prapunvanti. By giving such cows, my father or any person will go only to Narakam. Anandaha Lokaha means worlds of sorrow. Nandaha means sukham, happiness. Anandaha means sorrow. And so Dukkha Lokan or Ado Lokan Naraka Lokan Prapunavanti. And so I have to save my father from this. So this is what the Nachiketas, the son, thought. So he started scratching his head to find a solution. And after 1 week, he comes with the solution, which we are going to see in the next webinar next week. Yo veda dau swara prokto vedante cha pratishtitaha tasya prakriti linasya yapparasa maheshwaraha. Shri Krishna arpanamastu.